This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 17th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. Cliff Schechter will be with us to talk about the jam-packed week of news. Also, later in the program, providing me with a movie recommendation that I can stream online, the comedian Judy Gold will be joining us, I think for the first time, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how that's possible. Also on the program, President Obama just wraps up a major speech, I guess, depending on how you want to define major, on the NSA spying on non-ordinary Americans, I guess he would have you believe.
Only you weirdos.
Indeed. Also, the Voting Rights Act, a bipartisan bill introduced, will it go anywhere? And if it does, will it be worth going anywhere? Meanwhile, across the bridge or under the tunnel from where we are now, Chris Christie's water begins to boil just a little bit more. 20 subpoenas being issued by only one of the multiple legislative bodies that will be investigating Chris Christie's nefarious deeds. Also, we'll talk about the state of potential sanctions on Iran. All that and more, folks. It's getting a little bit annoying that we're having all these live events that are taking place right up to the moment of the show beginning. But I guess, I don't know. I guess that's basically the plan, right?
We really don't want Sam to cover this on the Majority Report today.
If you're President Obama or if you're Chris Christie.
Here's what we're going to do. Because I don't like that. Look, I'm just going to say this. That annoying Jew, frankly. Sam Steeder covering this stuff.
It's oddly enough exactly what Chris Christie said, too.
I just can't do a Chris Christie. I'm sure he said it much more vulgarly than that. So I'm going to run it through the bastard's entire podcast.
All right. Well,
he went on and on and on.
Chris Christie did, yes, definitely. And he is in big trouble. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Mr. Cliff Schechter. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook just to give you a chance to try out their service. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Why not check out Tanner Colby, our guest from the other day, his book on Chris Farley. They've got the Chris Farley Show, a biography in three acts. A little bit different pace for our peeps, but a lot of Chris Farley fans out there, so check it out. Of course, they've got hundreds of thousands of other titles. You can go over there. Head to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Get your free audio book. Check out what they got. We've had a lot of listeners who have enjoyed it. audiblepodcast.com/majority report. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Cliff Schechter. But as it is casual Friday and we're about to talk to Cliff Schechter, we first must listen to the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, Mr. Cliff Schechter, how are you, Cliff?
I'm doing pretty well, Sammy. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm a little tired. Saul's still not sleeping. Yeah. What are you going to do?
What's up with that Saul kid, huh?
Tell me about it.
What does he have against closing his eyes?
Well, he doesn't have any problem closing his eyes, but usually when he is, they're squeezed tight and he's screaming. And it's usually at about 2:30 in the morning. So
that's nice.
It's the sleep. It's the sleep. But, you know, this will pass. I'm sure in 4 or 5 years I'll look back and think that it's all gone in a blink of an eye. Now
they all say that, don't they?
Yeah.
And I guess it kind of is. I mean, you've got the daughter, older daughter. I mean, older, but older-ish compared.
She's 47.
And I've got the older-ish son compared. And it is kind of hard to believe how they get to the point where they're no longer just constantly pooping and vomiting, you know?
That is the truth. Now, but let's not waste any more time on my children.
On pooping and vomiting?
Yes,
yeah,
because
let's move on
God
to other
knows
stuff.
That there's a lot of time dedicated to that at every other moment of my day. But we've got a lot of stuff to talk about from this week, Cliff. First off, President Obama just gave a speech. I believe he did it from the Department of Justice on NSA reforms. Just briefly, let me just go down them rather quickly, and then you know, we can analyze this. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here, but I just somehow lost my sheet of paper that had all of it. But basically, the biggest, I guess, reforms that he mentioned were trying to review a way to find out where we can continue to grab everything, bulk surveillance, but not have it stored by the NSA. I don't know if we would just leave it with the
Home Depot,
telecom,
maybe
telecom, or maybe Home Depot. Maybe we could also ask Giuliani Partners to hold on to it for us. I mean, who knows?
They couldn't even hold on to his hair. So, I mean, Jesus, you know.
He goes on to say that, that, you know, that there's going to be more oversight from the FISA court. They're going to create an outside body of presumably people who care about civil liberties to review in certain situations and participate in the FISA court. They're only going to say that you can only have certain powers when it's necessary. I mean, let's cut to the quick here. The problem with much of this was we kept hearing the words intention over and over again. We kept hearing about how the NSA has not intentionally captured Americans' information. The FISA court at one point said only 11% of numbers being queried by the NSA met the legal standards. That's 1,800 out of 17,000 every day that they queried. So intention sort of is really not the point, is it?
No, I mean, my problem here, I think this is a complicated thing to try and reform, but I just still feel like on some of the NSA decisions, much like with a number of other areas, economics and foreign policy and other things, that President Obama is deferential to those who he kind of thinks are the in the know, you know, the establishment. I think it's a pattern that kind of hasn't changed during his presidency. And, you know, clearly we need to be collecting intelligence and, particularly on foreign threats. But, you know, the bulk collection of data, and, you know, and I'm going to just come out and say I'm not sure what all the answers are to this, but if you do, Sam, I'm happy to hear them. But relying on FISA courts, we'll go back to where I started. The bulk collection of data seems to me to be clearly unconstitutional, and there has to be a way of doing it, you know, where they can get specific warrants for what they need. Overall kind of the differentiation between, you know, what he's looking at domestically versus they are looking at domestically versus when it comes to foreign powers, is an important distinction and one that I don't think they're really making enough of that kind of distinction, and that is a problem. The FISA courts I admit, I trusted them in the past. I mean, my answer when George Bush, you know, with the illegal wiretapping was, you know, well, this is ridiculous. We had the FISA Act. We should be going through FISA courts. But once you find out it's like John Roberts stuffing the FISA courts with his buddies and that they're pretty much, you know, rubber stamping anything that comes through, that's a problem too. So I'm not sure I know what all the answers are. I know that transparency, you can't have full transparency because we're talking about national security, but I think the more people that are in a room of varying backgrounds helps. History again and again proves you do something in secret, it gets abused, if it's certainly by all people who share a mindset. You know, we went through all this stuff during the Kennedy years and the Church Committee and the rest, and the balance of power has fallen back towards the NSA. Because let's face it, there's a lot of these guys who go and they go out into private businesses, they come back in, they've got, you know, the connections, the revolving door. We've seen all this stuff. On the stuff that we know about, we've seen all this stuff, you know. What's his name? Homeland Security, Chertoff, you know, leaves Homeland Security and immediately is telling us all we need to buy these frickin' machines for the airports that, of course, his company is selling. So you're going to tell me they do that in public? What's going on in private? I don't know, but I think I'm glad we're having a conversation. I'm glad that President Obama felt compelled to come forward and share some ideas. I still don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, the biggest issue, I mean, I don't know. I think the thing I got distracted that distracted me during the speech was the constant use, there was a couple of things, and this is sort of almost not, this is sort of a broader view. The president kept saying intentional, and there's been no intentional, but, you know, when you see unintentional violations over and over and over again,
right,
it's a reminder that intentions are not really at issue here. You know, one can argue as whether or not that, you know, if you keep doing something unintentionally over and over again, you really are doing it unintentionally. But the point is,
well, at some point, if you keep doing it unintentionally over again, it doesn't matter, does it?
Right. And
I mean, whether you're doing it intentionally or not, you're doing it.
But particularly in this realm, intentions are irrelevant. At one point, the president said, look, I've been on both sides of this. I was very skeptical when I came in and to become president. When I became president, I saw it from the other perspective. But, you know, I'm sorry. This is exactly why we need a very specific, very rigid set of laws, because we can't, even if we are to accept the fact that President Obama is perfectly attuned to what that balance should be and that we can trust him, which I don't necessarily subscribe to, but even if I am to grant him that, the fact is that why should we, this is, he's not going to be president forever. In fact, we know that he's not going to be president 2.5 years from now. 3 years.
Come on,
from
President
now.
Ted Cruz wouldn't abuse
well,
any
exactly,
of that stuff.
Exactly. So it's not enough, and it's not even relevant as to how sort of judicious he is or those in his executive branch are. And so that it's just an incredible red herring. The other thing that I found very distracting is that he kept referencing 9/11 and the threats. And we know that this was not a question that there was not enough information. We know it was because it wasn't shared properly. We also now know there was a New America Foundation report that came out that basically enhanced what we saw in that U.S. Court of Appeals case from a couple of weeks ago, which is that there is no evidence that this bulk vacuuming up of metadata, which can actually identify people far more than the president led on to, has had any use in stopping so-called terrorist attacks. It's just there's no evidence of it. And
right,
every time
you
hear somebody cite one of these cases, whether it's the Zazi case or any other, it's been the use of that data has been debunked. And so we still have a question of, like, what is the justification, whether you put it in the hands of the telecoms or Giuliani partners or whomever, what is the justification for all this stuff?
Right. Well, and I also just have to ask the question, you know, because I remember we got into this whole debate when, for example, when torture was going on, and we kind of got dragged into the realm of does it work or not. And I, you know, I don't even care. I mean, there, it clearly, from what people are saying who actually know what they're talking about, which generally doesn't include Jonah Goldberg, it doesn't work. But it doesn't matter to me, because if you're doing something that is against the very founding and principles of this country that makes us a democracy, then, you know, great that it works. I'm sure there's other things where it worked, too. If you go into an apartment building and you take out 100 people and randomly threaten to shoot all of them, you may find one criminal. That's great that that works. Is that the country I want to live in? And so the bulk collection of data, as you said, doesn't seem to work, but I don't care so much. What I care about is the fact that we're entering an age of time now where using data and algorithms, you can figure out where people are. I mean, you know, this stuff is so advanced, it's kind of frightening. You know, look at what shows up when you go online, who's advertising to you and how they know to do so, and, you know, how people can easily figure out where you were and when you were there. I mean, you know, we got to deal with all this with private companies right now, too. I mean, hell, I'm sure Facebook's selling everything, every piece of information here is under the frickin', you know, sun if they can. So with the NSA, you can't tell me, you know, in the history of this kind of power is that it's always abused.
Right.
So anybody who thinks that this kind of stuff is not going to be abused for political reasons, for personal reasons, because, you know, I mean, you know, we've never seen things like Sarah Palin using a trooper, you know, to go after, like, what, her sister's ex-boyfriend or her sister's ex-husband or whatever, right? We've never seen Chris Christie use the government to punish people who are trying to drive over a bridge. Anybody who thinks that when people are in power are not going to abuse this kind of thing, they are. So you need to have two things. One, only do what is constitutional and necessary. And two, it needs to be severely safeguarded. And I'm not sure how exactly we get there. I certainly think expanding the FISA court to a certain degree, taking away the power from the Supreme Court justice, in my opinion, I don't care what Supreme Court it is. It happens to be Roberts, so they frighten me. To put the judges on those courts, to put it in front of a wider group of people who get to decide which judges sit on those courts, a diverse group of people, for example, needs to be done. There are a number of things, obviously, that need to be done. When it comes to the bulk collection, you know, I just don't – everything tells me that it's not necessary and it's not constitutional. And quite frankly, you know, before we were doing that, we were stopping people if we were paying attention. You know, there are no fewer than 60-something warnings. When you talk about 9/11, it was all right there in front of them.
Right.
I mean, all these assholes, pardon my French, who were screaming about Benghazi and making me want to punch them in the face. Yeah, I know. It was terrible, and we lost 4 people there. And you know what? The State Department should have had better security, although we should have never been in Libya, but that's a whole other story. But, yeah, how about the guys who are learning how to just, you know, guide airplanes and not take them off and land them, and the guys are hanging out down in Florida going to strip clubs who, you know, were magically overstaying their visas. And, you know, there's a lot of other stuff we need to get right first. Oh, and by the way, you know, all the stuff I work on guns, you know, yeah, we need to know every movement every one of these people made. Let's not check, though, whether they're on a terror watch list or they've committed criminal acts before, if they're going to buy a 50 caliber rifle that can take down a helicopter. You know, which we're not, by the way, right now. You can go to a parking lot somewhere near you and get that, depending upon the state you're in. There's a lot of things we can do that fit quite well within the Constitution to make all of us safer, and we're not even trying with a lot of them. But we're going to do this, you know, we're going to sweep up all this information. No, you know, and let's do the things that work. There are a bunch of them that do work and would have worked. And there are plenty of things, you know, if George W. Bush hadn't needed to go to clear all that brush off in his Crawford Ranch and think deep thoughts about stem cell research, there are a hell of a lot of warnings without bulk gathering of data that were right there in front of his face.
Yeah, and you know, I want to move on, and we'll obviously talk more about this on this program in the days and weeks to come. But you know, I think this was a reflection, and President Obama did reference Snowden and didn't want to ruminate on it, and then went on to sort of say how dangerous it was to have these revelations. But of course, and the implication being that, you know, we were going to talk about this stuff. I was really headed down that path. And then there was a little bit of, like, you know, China and Russia are worse, which of course they are. Ultimately, I think, you know, this is a response to the growing pressure in the House and the Senate to reform this stuff in a meaningful way. And I should note one other note before we go on, that any of these reforms that the president institutes from an executive level, there's still another bite at the apple legislatively. And so, you know, it remains to be seen whether or not this is going to let some of that air out of the tires or not. My guess is it won't.
Right. It is. No, I don't think so either.
The politics of this are very strange because, you know, I don't know how many Americans are sitting down and actually engaging in this. I just don't think there's that many, but certainly.
I still want to know, before we go on to any other topic, though, because I'm interested, as I respect your big brain, Sam, what you think we should do in terms of reforms.
Well, I mean, I think we need to make the FISA court. We need to bring the FISA court into some more. I think to keep it less of a parallel system of adjudicating these things. I think that there is value in bringing in, I mean, he mentioned sort of some broad outlines of it, but it seems some form of advocacy for defendants in front of the FISA court. In other words, right now,
or for the Constitution. In other words,
yes, I mean, right now you just have the executive branch going in and saying, "Here's our case as to why we should be able to expand our authority under these statutes," and there's nobody arguing against that. And
right. Clearly our whole system is based upon that, having
right.
advocates from both sides. So, yeah, that's an easy reform. I agree
think
with
that's
that,
somewhat problematic. And I also think that he went down from 3 hops to 2 hops on the bulk metadata collection. You know, that if you have 200 friends on Facebook, I think I saw one of the guys from The Guardian write that's, you know, that basically allows for sucking up 30,000 people's data. I think that's just too broad of a net. And I think that's just too problematic. And I think we just need far more transparency in the process. So, I mean, I think there's obviously more reforms. I mean, they haven't even dealt with the encryption standards. It's a massive undertaking, but I think what I didn't see from the president today was enough of an acknowledgement of the problem. And
right.
that's what's
do you think, I'm just interested in what you think about this. Do you think there's any justification for any semi-bulk gathering of data? And when I say semi, let me be very clear, which is people that have been accused, people that have been engaged in activity or have made a terror watch list or anything. In other words, not just everybody, but those sort of who potentially have not been convicted and yet we're tracking for various reasons. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, if there's reasonable suspicion, if
you
have reasonable suspicion of specific people, of course, there's value there. But that's the issue, is that this is willy-nilly.
I guess it's really whatever that standard rises to of reasonable suspicion, and maybe that's just what the FISA court decides is, you know, reasonable suspicion. We're
yeah.
back to where we started, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you and I are pretty much in the same place, because I like to get to talk it out, because I think some of this stuff is not just black and white. It's obviously complicated, you know, and to me what's clear is what we've been doing is wrong. What's less clear is how to make it exactly right, which is what I'm trying to think out.
I think, you know, the way you do that is basically get rid of bulk data collection, because by its very definition, that's what it is. It is collecting
right.
people's data regardless of without really any specific reason other than through a 6 degrees of separation. They are in some way related to someone you think might be someone worth watching. And I think that's problematic. But let's.
I agree with that.
Let's
unless they're gay or Muslim, in which case we should keep doing it.
Oh, well, of course. And I would throw in vegan. I don't think you want to let the vegans off so easy either.
You can't trust vegans, clearly. And yes.
All right.
Certainly, male Jews who originate from the Northeast also.
Men with curly hair.
Men with curly yes. hair. Kinky hair.
One that Ron Paul supporters say look very Jewish when they come on.
We can go, you know, maybe we'll talk just briefly about the Voting Rights Act fix, the bipartisan Voting Rights Act fix. People know the history of this. The Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, the preclearance formula. So they didn't gut the aspect of the Voting Rights Act, which calls for preclearance. They just said, you're not preclearing the right people. You got to go back to Congress. Even though you have reauthorized the preclearance measures 4 years ago, you got to go back and rewrite it. They
right.
have, or a bill has been written. It's a bipartisan bill that Sensenbrenner and Conyers have introduced or I think are on the verge with introducing legislation with Senator Pat Leahy, who's going to do so in the Senate.
And I'll say, first of all, what the Supreme Court obviously did was a travesty. We can agree on that. But looking at what I've looked at, I have to say I'm impressed with Sensenbrenner, who I never thought a whole lot of until it seemed like he, you know, really seemed to care about this. And he seems to, you know, this doesn't seem to be the Republican, oh, yeah, let's negotiate over health care, and they're just trying to sort of, you know.
Oh, no, I think this is legit.
He seems to really actually care about this, which I give him credit for. And I think looking over this does make some sense. It seems
well,
to
let me go over it for
go
one
ahead.
Second. So just so that yep. we know what we're talking about. It basically says there is a new formula for Section 4, which makes you eligible for preclearance. So it would replace, of those, I guess it was 15 or 12 states, it would replace Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas would be put back under, would now require preclearance, and it would do so because it has had five or more violations in the past 15 years. Leaving out Alabama, Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, which were all subject to preclearance before the Supreme Court struck down that formula in Shelby case. And it would also say that in that assessment, where you have had five or more violations in the past 15 years of the Voting Rights Act, the voter ID laws that have been struck down, and in fact, in Pennsylvania, one was just struck down by a state court, I think, today.
Right. Yeah, that just happened.
That would not be included as one of those things that would trigger, throw you back into preclearance. And that's,
that was my question reading this. It's the only thing I get is, what is considered a violation?
Everything else that has hitherto considered a violation. Whenever the Justice Department or a federal court has found that you're violating the rights, the voting rights of people under the Voting Rights Act, that would be considered a violation.
So why wouldn't, if they decide your voter ID law is unconstitutional, why isn't that considered a violation?
That's the negotiated part of this bill, that basically we're just going to now say that when it's found that, now that doesn't mean that the Justice Department can't still bring court cases and say that voter ID is unconstitutional. It's just that that will not count as part of the formula to have you pre-cleared. There are, okay. And that is very problematic, of course, because
yeah, that seems like a little bit of BS written into
it. It gives some credence to the idea of voter ID laws. However, we should say that the other sections, Section 3, is strengthened because now plaintiffs now have to show that jurisdictions they want to bail in. Section 3 is the bail in. Plaintiffs no longer have to prove intentional violation of the Voting Rights Act, just that there was a de facto one. And there's a couple of other provisions. I don't know where this law is going to go, but the real question is, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth it doing this formula, which could be the only thing that could pass? Maybe even this wouldn't even pass. When you're ensconcing at least voter ID, making it a little bit less.
Right. Well, I think it is worth it, it seems to me. And again, I've read through it, but I didn't even understand that the voting ID part. I'd read that and it didn't make sense to me. Now it makes sense to me. It's just it's not because of any real reason. They're just leaving it out.
Right.
And that seems to be the biggest thing that's going to be violated, quite frankly, by the states, which is why it's probably being left out. That's the most effective way of disenfranchising people. Certainly one of them. So, I've got a problem with that, but, you know, like everything else, I don't think there's ever a bill that passes that I don't have a problem with. I mean, if it reinstitutes a lot of these other things that we desperately need, as long as the courts keep doing their part in Texas and Pennsylvania and other places in striking down these ridiculous voter ID laws, then I would say that, you know, this is very much worth it.
Yeah, you know? I think so.
We can hopefully get to a future place. People forget that in 2016, there will be a Democrat at the top of the ticket. The Republicans then won't be able to rely on old white guys the way they can more often do in midterms and whatever, and are going to have to put up somebody that can actually win an election, generally somebody who doesn't plop themselves down on a bridge and block it. The Republicans are going to have a hard time then. And frankly, what I point out to people that bring up the Senate situation in 2014 is all the people in 2016 who had no business winning in 2010, who won because of Citizens United and the wave, that these people are going to have to hold on to your Pat Toomeys and Kelly Iotes and people like that, Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, who have been way to the right of the states they're in. There's a great chance that you get a Democratic president and you get a Democratic even a stronger Democratic Senate, or if you lose it briefly, you get it back. And then the House, that would be the time when, if we're going to win the House back, I think we can pick up House seats this time if they run on the right issues. But that would be the time. And then you can improve all this stuff. Then you can make it better. Why, in the meantime, shouldn't we make it somewhat better with the plan of making it fully better, hopefully a couple years down the road? That's what seems to me to make sense.
You know, I would tend to agree. The one thing to look out for is just from a strategic standpoint in terms of voting rights advocates, did it make sense to concede that that part about voter ID not being a litmus test for being subject to this Section 4 formula? If this bill never makes sense.
You can undo that, right? I mean,
well, you can undo it. The question is if it's not enough to bring this bill to the floor, have you sort of in some way destigmatized that just a little bit? My guess is on balance, I'm with you. I think this
is... Well, I just think rhetorically you stand up and you say, you know, we don't like this. We think this part of it is not good. But overall, it's sort of like if we pass immigration reform, if we were, you know, putting like sharks and lasers and whatever else they want to put up on some stupid fence that doesn't work along the border, and I'm, of course, exaggerating, but the whole stuff about we must protect and the fence and all that, that's crap, and hopefully crap we would undo down the road. But to me, if it gives people a path to citizenship, you still do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like, you know, because and you're conceding a point with that, too. You're admitting, in a way, unless you stand up and you make it very clear rhetorically, that there is a problem on the border, as if people are trying to sneak in, which they're, by the way, not anymore because our economy sucks. But, you know, you're conceding that in a way by supporting that, but I just think you need to make it very clear. You're supporting it in spite of that and not because of it. And you're going to we're going to come back to this later when things are in a different position congressionally.
Right.
You know, I feel that way with a lot of legislation, and I think this is the way I feel with this.
All right. Let's move on to the Chris Christie thing. And there's a lot of aspects of this that is obviously that you and I both enjoy.
It's a great story. So
it is really unraveling for Christie. It's also been fascinating to me to watch. I mean, I've gone on MSNBC over the past couple of weeks talking about Chris Christie, and it is in many respects. It's worth talking about from a meta perspective. Just sort of how having an MSNBC who is sort of being relentless in its coverage of this is in some ways, I mean, I, you know, it's hard to sort of provide a counterfactual, but driving some of the investigations on some level. But first off, the big news as of, I guess, last night was that the Bergen Record and the Newark Star Ledger, and now NBC as well, is basically saying that there are going to be at least 20 aides subpoenaed by the New Jersey Assembly's investigation of this. Now,
right.
Remember, there's the Assembly's investigation. There's the New Jersey Senate investigation. Jay Rockefeller is doing an investigation on a federal level on the, I think it's the Transportation Committee.
I think you've got four of them, right? I mean, you've got the federal, you know, Congress, you've got the state legislature, you've got the state version of the FBI, and you've got the federal Justice Department. Am I correct about that?
The state version of the FBI is the U.S. Attorney's Office. That's the Department of Justice. U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey is investigating it. We have no sense of what they're doing because they're very quiet about it. And there's still some holdovers from the Christie days. So the real action, I think, is in these two legislative bodies in New Jersey who are both operating investigations, both headed by Democrats. And then you have that.
You know what I'd love them to do, by the way, is subpoena the hell out of some of these party bosses on the Democratic side that endorse this guy. And why don't we find out what the hell they were given?
Yeah, well, this is expanding
into bribery cases just waiting to come out.
And I think some of that has to do with Sandy funds, and that is starting to open up. But the interesting thing is that initially, the special committee in the assembly, it is chaired by a guy named John Wisen Wisniewski.
Something like that.
And originally he was just there. His committee was just going to subpoena two or three people. They then hired Reed Schar, who was the former federal prosecutor who investigated Blagojevich. And then all of a sudden, 17 new subpoenas, including that guy, David Sampson, who was the highest ranking New Jersey official in the Port Authority. This is the guy.
He's the chair. I think he's the chairman of the Port Authority, former AG, too. And he's the guy that Christie lied about and said that he hadn't spoken to him since the whole thing, which is one of the many lies Christie has told that has been exposed, which is that he had met with him a week later.
Yep.
So I mean, yes. So what did he say to him a week later when he met with him? You know, what was he saying to his aides that day when he was spending time one of the very days that the traffic jam was going on? We now have pictures of him, you know, with a bunch of these aides. I think this is hugely important and really.
He's in trouble. He's in big trouble. And the amazing thing is, like, look, you know, if you watch MSNBC during prime time, there are two New Jersey state legislators on every primetime channel at minimum. And there are New Jersey reporters.
Steve Kornacki, you know, came up as a New Jersey reporter.
Yes.
He's at MSNBC. And he, I'm trying to find the tweet now because I retweeted something he sent out. And maybe you'll remember this, Sam. But on the side of what we were talking about before, he sent out, because he's looking through this stuff. And this, again, they did this so blatantly that that's why I know Christie's screwed, because this stuff is not going to be, it's going to come out hand over fist. And one of the ones he exposed was how one of the guys who endorsed Christie magically got like this huge number of funds for this new library or something in his city, you know, right afterwards, right as, you know, when you compare it to Fallop, you know, Steve Fallop, the mayor of Jersey City, who was busy having all of his meetings canceled within an hour of each other when he refused to endorse, or the mayor of Hoboken, who needed $100 million in funds, I can't remember what it was, but it was a pretty serious project, and got something like $300,000.
Right, in terms of Sandy
right after
relief,
he refused
yes.
to endorse. I mean, there's going to be so many examples of this. The pattern will be so clear that it'll just be easy. It'll just be that easy. And I'm sorry, but one of these people, I don't know who yet, or, you know, some of them, but when he's sitting there, this guy, David Wildstein, he's busy talking it up, you know, how Chris Christie was Mr. Jock and school president, you know, which when you need to brag about that stuff in a press conference and you're trying to protect your job, it kind of tells you something about his psyche anyhow,
right.
And what's going on in his brain and how deeply insecure this man is, which explains a lot. But he's busy sort of trashing
Wildstein.
He had hid them or tried to hide them. So it seems clear to me at this point now that he's trashed Wildstein that all you need is one guy like him to tell the truth. I mean, they're basically begging for immunity. Give him immunity, a few others. Immunity. Maybe, you know, Bridget, whatever her name is, will end up being stupid and loyal and she feels like going to prison. But some of these people won't feel like that. When there's this many people that have witnessed something, I'm sorry, there's going to be a couple of them that are going to talk. Or this will be, you know, that 1% of cases where that doesn't happen. And so this guy's screwed, because I don't doubt for a second that he knew. At the very least, he knew they were doing something. He told them not to tell him exactly what it was and figured it out as it was going on and lied ever since then and committed obstruction of justice and a variety of other things.
Right.
That's at the very least.
Right. At the very least, the real problem for him is going to be that day that he said, I was moving the cones, because he clearly knew by that point.
Yes.
And I would guess that he knew before then. I mean, I still contend that the real sort of like unraveling will be when we find out who that other person was in that text message exchange
right.
with Wildstein about the kids.
I think he ends up resigning.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to get impeached, because I think they're going to threaten to impeach him. It's going to be like Nixon, and he's going to take the walk instead of being impeached, is what my guess is with him.
And maybe we'll see something like where, you know, like it's like a hostage situation, and they bring Bruce Springsteen out, and they just say, you know, he just says, Governor Christie, if you resign now, I promise we can have lunch together, or something like that.
I'll let you touch my... How did you touch my sweaty bandana?
You're gonna get backstage passes for one of my concerts and just admit you did wrong. And
it would be cool if they brought Bruce in to just sort of negotiate the whole thing.
Right. And
sort of did it as a concert with, like, you know, so we could hang out there and, you know, I don't know. That would be the best in the world. That parody was fabulous.
I enjoyed it.
Because it is, and if you know the inside baseball of it, which a lot of people who follow this stuff do, is you know that Christie is hopelessly in love with Bruce Springsteen. So the fact that his idol was mocking him makes it that much more painful. And I have to admit, I'm a bad human being. The schadenfreude from this could wake me up in the morning and power me the entire day.
On that note, Cliff. May Chris Christie continue to add fuel to the fire that gets you through the day.
I'm a bad man, Sam. I'm just a bad man. I can't help it.
Next week, I will be in D.C. for the Families USA conference on healthcare. And so we may or may not talk. We probably will. But I will be doing it remotely. So until then, Cliff.
So what you're saying is you may be around more important people than me, so you may be able to fill this slot.
Possibly. It's possible.
Yeah, I understand that. I know my place on the hierarchy.
We will see. I'm also was hoping that maybe you'd be in D.C., but I guess I've got that question.
Well, I hadn't planned that yet, but let's talk offline. Because I do need to go to D.C. for some meetings, so we could maybe set that up. That'd be fun.
Okay.
So let's talk.
All right. We will talk to you next week.
Great.
Thanks
again, Sammy. Thanks, guys.
All right. We've got to take a brief break, ladies and gentlemen. And when we come back, we will be talking to the comedian, Judy Gold. Comedianess? We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome, and I think it's this can't be the first time that you've been on this program, the inimitable Judy Gold. Hello, Judy.
Sam, it is such an honor to be on your program. And as you know, I'm a big fan of yours, but my partner, Lisa, thinks you're the hottest thing going.
There you go. Yes.
I know.
I've never met Lisa, but I'm glad to hear that. I mean,
it's Elisa, and she's hot. All right, but who cares?
Okay.
Just want you to know you cross all bridges, and
that's right. Now my cue,
just like Christie, yeah.
My cue rating with partnered lesbian women, with older grandmothers. I do well, like across, almost, I'm like a four quadrant type of guy.
Yeah, that's great. It's the hot young women that you have a problem with.
That's true. Yes, that was always the problem, and I somehow, though, I convinced my wife, though.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, I did all right.
Yeah, she did all right.
Well, thank you, Judy.
Oh, you're welcome, Sam.
Now, Judy.
Yes.
I know, you know, like we've been trying to schedule this for a couple of weeks. I know how much you dislike Chris Christie, so I'm almost inclined just to let you say, just talk for 10 minutes about how much you hate him. But why you, your very visceral reaction to this guy.
Okay. Well, you know, I grew up in New Jersey, and my family settled in New Jersey when they came here. I'm a Jersey girl. I live in New York. I went to Rutgers, you know, and I actually met him. I gave the speech to induct Judy Blume, also from New Jersey, into the New Jersey Hall of Fame, and I met him there.
Wait a second, there's a New Jersey Hall of Fame?
Yeah, there's a New Jersey Hall of Fame.
I had no idea. Where is it? Who's in that?
Okay, I don't know, Bruce Springsteen, have you heard of him?
Yes. And then there's no one else.
You know, I mean, there's plenty.
John Bon Jovi. And Judy Blume. Is that the entire roster?
Blume is one. There's some pretty big names in there. I would have to Google right now and cheat. But anyway.
Where is it?
It's like in Newark or something. It's at some big theater, and I don't know.
Wait, so it's not really an existing place. It's just sort of like it exists in
it's a
people's
honor.
Minds. It's a state of mind. It's a state of
oh,
mind.
Oh, you know who else was... you know Fortune. Who else? What's his name? Alito. One of my other favorites, Sam Alito.
Oh, God.
He's hot, and also, I just really, terrific. Sam Alito from New Jersey, so proud.
Wonderful.
Yeah, anyway, so I met him. And all right, here's the reason besides the fact, I grew up in New Jersey, I grew up with guys like that. The guy is my age, I know exactly what he's like. I like Wildstein, that little schlubby, little annoying Jew. Like, I got the whole thing, okay? I know the whole scenario, okay? And... You know,
we be more explicit. You can't just say that. Who are these people?
Just get doing a background check. You know, I'm setting up the scene. But let me tell you something. Okay. I have done for years. I've really done a lot of work with Garden State Equality, which is their marriage equality organization. And you know, the fact that it passed, marriage equality passed, and he vetoed it. He vetoed it. It passed. And that one vetoed it because of his presidential aspirations. Instead of giving people in his state the same benefits and equality as everyone else, meanwhile, his brother-in-law is gay. You know, he has a family member who's gay. And it's simply all because of his goals and dreams that he takes away rights of citizens. What is his problem? Okay, sorry.
No, it was good. You just got to back off the phone just a little
bit. That really pissed me off. That really pissed me off. That New Jersey to New York, the Port Authority, they were going to put a tunnel in.
Right.
What was that? It would have created jobs, and then there would have been less traffic. Like, what was that you had to veto that?
Well,
now he's vetoing the DREAM Act? Who is he? He is like... I hate him. Like, who does he think he is? Like, he's your boss. Oh, I know better than you. Oh, don't you worry. Okay.
You really? To be fair, though, he didn't want to. He was afraid that bridge would cost the state money, and he wanted to save at least, I think it was $500 million to put more money into the former Xanadu. I don't know what they're calling it now.
First of all, it would have created jobs, and then all that real estate by there, people would have moved to those areas, and the real estate would have gone up. And you know what? It would have been more lanes that he can close. So what the hell didn't he do it for?
I think even then it was his presidential aspirations. I mean, that was at a time where, to make your bona fides as a Republican, that's what you needed to do. You needed to reject federal funding, federal financing of any type of large infrastructure project. That was
really. He can take federal financing for Hurricane Sandy, which, by the way, Hurricane Sandy was his running mate, by the way, in case anyone didn't notice. Okay. So he can take all the federal funding and make a commercial about him and his friggin' family down the shore. You know, like, really? Ugh.
Judy. You know, I don't know if we spoke on the old Majority Report on Air America, and I think, you know, I think you were on some of the shows I had there, but I mean, I don't know if I ever realized just like how political you are. Do you have any inclination to move back to New Jersey just to vote against this guy or what?
Just to give him the finger, you know, but, yeah, he spoke to that teacher, you know, the way he speaks to people, like, you're less than I am. Who do you think you are? And have you looked in the mirror? I mean, seriously. I mean, I'm not like that. I'm a large woman. I, you know, but really.
Well, let me ask you this, Judy. How does the guy still have 50% approval rating in New Jersey?
That is why I left New Jersey and moved to New York. Because those people, because you know what? I talked, first of all, the majority are men. And they're all like, yeah, I like the way he says what he means. He's a straight talker. You know, he's like their Tony Soprano. I don't know. I don't get it. The guy, and what about his whole, you know, and you heard the new one about I'm going to be living and dying in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Shut up.
What the hell was that about? He gave it, let me just tell people, he gave a speech, I guess it was yesterday or 2 days ago, it was about the Sandy aid, and he said, I was born in Jersey, I'm going to live in New Jersey, I'm going to die in New Jersey. There's something about New Jersey that type of parochialism, do you think it's because it's in the sort of shadow of New York that to sort of like promote yourself as a Jersey guy first is sort of the penultimate for a lot of New Jerseyites?
You know, look, we do get a bad rap, people from New Jersey, and I often say, you know, I don't live there anymore, but it really is not a horrible place. But I have to say, wherever I go,
that's quite an endorsement.
I love it there. I mean, I love New York. I always wanted to live here. But the point is that wherever I am, I can tell. I could be in, you know, Montana, which I'd never be there because no one would ever book me there. But anyway, because I'm a Jew and I'm a lesbian. But anyway, I could be there on a layover, and I could tell who is from New Jersey. When I meet someone, it's just something. It's like you went through the war together, you know?
Right.
You can tell New Jersey people.
There's this like a similar quality to Massachusetts too, I think, on some level that I've noticed. But I think, you know, I've always just perceived it as just, you know, a healthy dose of parochialism.
Yeah. Well, we are sort of the, you know, everyone thinks we're like the ugly stepchild of New York.
Right.
Right. And yeah. Okay. There are some areas on the turnpike where I'll be driving with my kids and I turn around and say, who farted? And no one did. It's just that area, you know? So yeah, there are some not so beautiful parts, but there are some really great parts of New Jersey.
Yeah. I've that's what I've heard.
And the shore. Have you been to the Jersey Shore?
Yeah. I've been down to Jersey Shore. I had a buddy, a long time ago, had a place, or his parents had a place on Lavalette. So I've been to Seaside and that whole thing.
I mean, it's nice. If you just close your ears and don't listen to the conversations around it, you're fine.
Yes. Now, Judy, let me ask, you know, I went to your website, which I have to admit that I had not been to, judygold.com before this.
Apparently, no one who works on the website has been there either, but yeah.
But what, every time I talk to you, you're going on another TV show. Like, what, you're constantly doing different TV shows that frankly, and I have to admit that I, you know, my entertainment intake is so narrow, but I've never heard any of these. Like, what, you're on the Celebrity Cook-Off and what?
Rachel versus Guy, Celebrity Cook-Off.
Who's Rachel? Who's Guy? Who are these people?
Oh my God, really? You're kidding.
No.
All right. This is pathetically sad. Okay, Rachel Ray. Do you know Rachel Ray?
She's the one. Is she the one who got in? No, that wasn't. She's a cooking person.
Oh, my God.
She's not the one who got in trouble
for she has her own daytime show, the Ray Show.
Okay. The Rachel Ray Show. All right. Okay.
And then Guy Fieri, or as they say, Guy Fieri, I guess he won some, like, Next Great Food Network star several years ago. And now, I swear to God, every time we put on the Food Network, it's just him. He does his Diners and Drive-Ins, and, you know, he has 8,000 restaurants, and, you know, he has white hair and tattoos, and, but anyway, so it's sort of like Celebrity Apprentice-ish, kind of, but you're each on a team. You're either on Rachel's team and Guy's team, and you have to do these cooking challenges, and every week someone gets knocked off.
All right, so now, and I noticed, you're doing it with, who is it, Penn, or is that Gillette?
Penn Gillette's on my team, Florence Henderson, and Jake Pavelka, the bachelor, who could not keep his hands off of me.
I don't know who the Jake LaVelcha guy is, but do you ever get...
Pavelka!
Who?
Pavelka, please, I didn't know either, I don't watch those shows. Okay.
Wait a second, so I want to ask you about Penn Gillette, though. Do you ever get in any type of political conversations with him?
You know, I've known Penn for many years. I try not to. It would be similar to having a political conversation with Chris Christie. But he's a great guy. He's really smart and really talented. He is an atheist, but he pontificates about being an atheist. He's like a born-again atheist. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that part doesn't bother me as much as the sort of the libertarian stuff.
Right, the libertarian stuff. But you know what? He's so passionate. You know how there are some people, it's like, that is who they are. That is, you'll never change their mind. They have all their arguments right there, in the cortex of their brain, ready to go. And you're never, it's like, it's not worth it. So you just, I always am like, yes, I totally agree. Yep, exactly.
I want to have him on my show to debate him on stuff.
You know, you guys would be great. You guys would be great. Yeah, he's got everything right. It's amazing. He's really articulate.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think maybe we're going to have to do that. And so, what else you do? Is your play still going on?
All right, so I did my show in L.A., which was great. My one person show, the Judy Show, my life is a sitcom. It's not, but I am going into a new off-Broadway play that already exists. I'm taking Mary Testa's place, the show Disaster. It's hilarious, and it's about all those, it's a campy takeoff on all those stupid disaster films of the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And it's really funny. I actually went to go see it because it got great reviews, and I wanted to see it. And Seth Rudetsky and Jack Plotnick wrote it. I'm sure you don't know who they are, but they're
Jack,
really talented.
Jack
great.
Plotnick?
Yes.
I know Jack. He was
really?
Actually, from years ago out in L.A., Jack, it's the same Jack, right? He's a skinny dude, and he used to do, I can't remember what TV he used to do, but I think I put him in Who's the Caboose?
Really?
Yeah.
He's really great. He's great. So, yeah, he was in Gods and Monsters.
Yeah, I think so. I think I know him.
Yeah, you probably do. So they wrote it. It's really funny. I went to see it, and then I went out to dinner with Seth and his partner, James, because he's gay, and everyone's gay, and gay. And we're at dinner, and he said, you would be great for that Shirley part. And I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then it turns out Mary Testa, who you probably don't know.
I don't know. I haven't picked up on any name that you've mentioned except for Jack Black.
A Tony-nominated actor, but whatever. She is leaving, and I'm taking her part, so...
Well, if you ever run into Jack...
Doing that, and I do my performing, but you know what? Honestly, if I could have a radio show or be on The View, I would be the happiest girl in the world.
Really? That's it?
Go to work, come home, and I don't have to travel, and I can be with my kids, and I can talk about Chris Christie.
Yeah, you have nice kids. I've met your kids. I mean,
thanks.
What? Why do you say it that way?
I don't know.
You getting sick of them?
Of course, I think they're all screwed up because I'm their mother. But yeah, they are nice.
No, those kids are smart kids.
You know, they're smart and savvy, and I just hope I didn't screw them up that much.
What, that much? I mean, how much could you have screwed them up?
Oh, please! You know, I tried to do the opposite of my mother, but sometimes it just. It just comes out like I just 10 minutes to myself. can I have 10 minutes? You know, like that kind of stuff. It just starts spewing out of me.
Well,
you know, and they're like, what do you want for your birthday? You two to get along and stop fighting. All I want is you to stop. I mean, it's just, and the voice is ridiculous.
What's the voice? Oh, your voice, you mean?
Right. It is, you know, it's a hybrid of my mother's voice.
There you go. Well, but I don't know. Yeah. I've met your kids. They seem perfectly well-adjusted. You know, they seem like nice kids to me. I don't think you've, maybe the damage,
really,
the damage
great,
will probably
smart,
come out in 10 years, though.
Huh?
How old is your oldest?
The oldest one is 17. The youngest one's 12.
Wow. Yeah. The damage will probably come out with the oldest in about probably 8 years, right? I mean, isn't it?
Yeah.
It shows up around the mid-20s, I think, is when
right.
really start to realize how much your parents have screwed you up.
Right. He knows already, I think.
All right. Well, that's good. He's ahead of the game. That way
but
he can start to recover.
He's about how screwed up I am, yeah.
Now,
I thought we were talking about movies.
Well, I know. Well, yeah, I want to get a movie selection from you. I will do that in a second. But say hi to Jack Plotnick for me.
I'm going to say hi to Jack. I haven't seen him, but I'm going to say hi. What about Seth? Do you know Seth Rudetsky?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God.
What's he? Who's he?
All right. He has a radio show on Sirius.
No.
And he's sort of like, how can you describe him? The Barry Manilow of musical theater. I mean, like, everyone knows him. He accompanies everyone. He's a writer. He performs a lot. He's great. I can't say I said Barry. I believe I said Barry Manilow, but he's kind of Barry Manilow-ish.
Oh, all right. I have no idea who he is.
Okay.
I don't
all
know.
Right.
I have no idea.
Bet.
And you're, you know, we should say also, full disclosure, back in the day, you starred in Beat Cops. How was that?
Remember?
Experience? Yeah. We've never talked about that experience. How did you enjoy it?
Oh, my God. How great was that?
It was fun, actually.
I know. Whatever happened to that?
Nothing.
And that sums up my career.
Nothing happened. I think it's on.
You put on the TV, you look at what's there, and you're like, really? I mean, it really is unbelievable what gets made.
Yeah.
And what doesn't get made.
Yeah. That's the story of it, right? I mean, that's why you want to do radio.
But you know what's great?
What?
Duck Dynasty, ratings down.
I heard that. Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
That's so sort of strange in a way, isn't it?
You would think they would go up, but they lost like 4 million viewers.
That's really, I enjoy that quite a bit, but that is really, really strange in a way.
Right.
It's almost as if people got oversaturated. Like, there's really, I mean, Duck Dynasty's not that good. And when it was something that, like, maybe, you know, it was just sort of like an offhand thing. But when you've got to be self-conscious about watching that, maybe that's the problem. Is that it's just, I mean, I watched one episode just coincidentally, probably 2 weeks before this whole thing became a thing.
Okay.
And I think, like, I had meant to watch it because I think during his fake filibuster, wasn't Rand Paul talking about, or maybe it was Ted Cruz was talking about Duck Dynasty.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what is this?
Because he's family values, hating gay people and saying that blacks were happier during slavery is family values.
Right. And I watched it and it was the most stilted reality show I've seen. I mean, you know, I'll watch Dog the Bounty Hunter and I'll watch, I don't know what else. No, I've never watched Jersey Shore. Do you watch Jersey Shore?
No, I don't watch any of that crap.
All right.
I watch Downton Abbey.
Never seen it.
Oh, my God. Addicting. All right, I watched Downton Abbey, Mad Men.
Yeah.
I watched The Voice because
oh,
I love
you know what?
Music.
Let me tell you something else about Mad Men you'll appreciate. The one and only time I met Jon Hamm, I was at a party. You know, I was pretty excited because I watched Mad Men. It's one of the few shows I watched, and this was probably about, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago. And I guess I had already known his girlfriend. I don't know if he's still or they're married or whatever, but
yeah, they're still together. Yeah.
She had done a movie that I had auditioned for and she was friends with another friend of mine, but I met Jon Hamm
And, you know, he was friends with a bunch of comedians that I'm friendly with. And, you know, they used to talk about how weird it was that he was, you know, a madman. But I met him and I was a little bit starstruck in a way that I generally am not. And the first thing out of his mouth, he says to me, "I swear to God, I'm a big fan of yours. I love Beat Cops."
No effing way.
That's exactly what I said. I said, I looked around. I go, did someone tell you to say that? Or he goes, "No." And I'm like, "How did you ever see it?" And he goes, "I don't know. He saw it at some, you know, they were traveling around with pilots that were unmade or something. Somebody showed it." And he loved that show. So there you go.
That's, oh my God. Don't you love that?
You
probably don't know this, but apparently he has a huge penis.
That did not factor into my excitement as much, but I can't deny that it doesn't add a little bit now.
You can Google that. It is apparently enormous. Just so you know. So he's a nice guy with the huge penis. Now, Chris Christie, I'm just thinking.
That's a guess.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. He probably hasn't seen it in many years, so it's whatever.
Oh, there you go.
But I always just go there. But I love John Hamm. I think he's really talented. He's great on SNL.
Yeah, I haven't seen him. I've missed that. The only thing I've seen SNL is when Louis C.K. was on, and that was it. I haven't seen it in like 15 years or something. All right.
Wow. Well,
now, look, speaking of movies and shows, as you know, Judy, I have in addition to my 8-year-old daughter, I have a 10-and-a-half-month-old son. And
which you were thrilled about, yes.
Yes, and you know I'm kept on a very tight leash at home, so I'm not allowed to go out and see movies in theaters. I can only see them streaming online. And so on Fridays, I like to get a recommendation. Sometimes I follow it, sometimes I don't, and, you know, maybe it's helpful for other people. What, Judy, should I watch? Don't say Downton Abbey. I'm not going to watch that.
Saying Downton Abbey.
Huh?
I already figured out what movie I'm going to tell you.
Really?
Uh-huh.
All right, that's good.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you looking at your notes? What are you doing?
No, I'm trying to build it up, but it's not working. Okay.
It was some type of drum roll or something.
I know. I was like waiting for the, yeah, okay. All right.
Hold on. Here's the breaking news sound.
Oh, my God, I love it.
All right, now's the time where you give the report.
All right, Sam. Well, I've got a movie I think that you'd really enjoy that I found to be fascinating on many levels as a music lover, as a woman, and as an African-American.
What?
Wannabe. I suggest that you watch 20 Feet from Stardom.
Ah, I've heard of this.
It is amazing. You will never listen to a song the same way again.
Now, I heard somebody saying this. Would this be good for Myla, too? Would she enjoy? Is this appropriate for an 8-year-old?
Oh, my God. It's so great. It's about all the backup singers. And you learn so much. And it's just, it's so entertaining and, you know, historical. It's great. It is so great. And everyone should see it.
That's a winner, I think, because I'm looking for something.
And you can watch it with your daughter.
I'll tell you, we do movie nights now on Saturday night, and we went through all three of Back to the Futures, and we were thinking about watching an Elvis Presley movie this weekend because, for some reason, Myla is now sort of obsessed with Elvis Presley.
Oh, that's good. You know, he was a Jew. Did you know that?
What?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Elvis Presley's mother had Jew in her family. He has a Star of David on his headstone or grave, whatever.
You're kidding?
No, just, you know what? If you need any Jew questions, call me.
Why? Now, in fact, I was going to give your Twitter handle. It's Jewy Gold, isn't it?
No, it's not.
What?
Jewy.
What
no,
is
no,
it?
No.
Oh, Judy.
Judy Gold. J-E-W-D-Y.
I don't know why I always read it as Jewy Gold. Gold. Oh my God!
Gold? Come on, yeah, it's Jew D.
I didn't realize that. I thought I always read it as Jewy Gold. I'm not kidding. I don't. I mean, I follow you, but I don't know why.
I am Jewy, but you know.
I don't. Wow. What? Who the heck is Jewy Gold? Then is that? Do you have a parody account?
No. Wait. So you've been? It's Judy with a D.
No, I mean I. Oh, wait a second. Now wait a second. Oh. Okay. It's J-E-W-D-Y.
Right, Judy.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
J-E-W-D-Y.
Okay. All right, that's fair enough. All right, fair enough. That's. Yeah, but I know, but it's not the way you spell Judy.
No, you spell it J-U-D-Y. It's sort of a takeoff.
Yeah, okay, no, I get it.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea Elvis Presley was Jewish, if that makes you feel
right,
better.
And his middle name is Aaron.
Wow, Elvis Aaron Presley? Is that his real name?
Aaron, A-A-R-O-N.
No, but I mean, is Elvis Presley his real name or no?
Elvis Aaron Presley, his maternal great-great-grandmother was a Jew.
Wow, and for that, he puts a star on his...
Doll Manziel, who gave birth to Gladys Smith, who gave birth to Elvis Presley. So, I mean, if we were going to round everyone up for the pogroms, he would be in there.
All right, well...
Maybe not, because it's a great-great-grandmother.
Yeah, we would have that would significantly enhance the music.
Believe it?
No, that's exciting.
And when he was in Salt Lake City in 1972, he wore a big chai symbol.
Really?
Yeah, and he put a Jewish star on his mother's headstone.
Wow. I had no idea about any of that.
Can you believe it?
Wow, so... Judy Gold shows up with information on John Hamm's private parts.
Right.
A great movie recommendation, 20 Feet from Stardom.
Mm-hmm.
And a ethnic breakdown of Elvis Presley.
And what about my Chris Christie rant?
The Chris Christie stuff was awesome. That was also great.
Thank you. I have passion. My mother is always like, "What are you getting your red blood pressure up for?"
Judy, we got to do this again.
Oh, my God. Anytime. You know I'm a big fan of yours.
Well, I'm a big fan of yours, and I appreciate you coming on.
Anytime.
All right, folks. Bye, Judy.
Bye. Have a great weekend.
You too. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Judy Gold.
How have we not had her on before? She's great.
I could have sworn that we had her on before.
That's the first movie pick from a guest that I'm going to see for a long time.
Wow.
It was a great pick.
Hope you mean listening. Not a Matt Matthew film guy or an Isabel? Or are you saying just period?
I think I watched a Matthew pick a while ago.
Just throwing them under the bus.
No, wow. I'm. It's not like I go out of my way
Isabel
not to see them,
this?
But I was just like...
Wait till we tell Isabel.
All right, sure. Let's instigate something.
All right.
No problem.
Consider
it
instigated.
I didn't mean it like that, but we could take it like that.
All right. Now, do we have a...
Judy Gold and Matt have some overlap.
What do you mean?
Like the same passion levels, the hot mic, the great rants.
Oh.
I'm seeing some Binder Gold.
All right. Now, do we have anything from...
I actually did not check. Let me take a quick look.
No, I don't think... I am not seeing anything from Jimmy Reefer Cake this week.
And we don't.
All right, Jimmy Reefer Cake taking a break. That's all good. Just some housekeeping. Next week on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I will be in D.C. for Families USA Conference on healthcare. And we will be live from there. So, and on Monday, we're going to run the... more or less the same program that we've been running for the past couple of years, a compilation of clips for Martin Luther King's to celebrate his birthday. Mila was also said to me the other day, she said, both Martin Luther King and Elvis Presley died in Memphis.
No real connection there, but...
But, yes, it was okay. Out of the mouths of babes. I'm not sure.
Pattern recognition.
That's good. All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to move into What do we should do? We're going to do a whole Freebie Friday or no? Let's not.
Yeah, let's not. We've given them enough. Let's do a quick break. We'll come back earlier than usual.
Yeah.
And we'll just get to some stories and IMs and phone calls.
646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 if you want to participate in the program. Folks, you can support this program by becoming a member. 33 cents a day makes the free show possible. Gets you some bonus show. And I've had people write in, actually, who just recently... We had some IMs like this, but I also I got an email. I meant to pull this. People's like, you know, when you say it was the funner half, it really is the funner half. It's super fun. Become a member today at majority.fm. You can also support the show by going to majorityreportkickback.com. If you buy crap through Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com. You will notice no difference. You can simply bookmark it. Always go there to buy your Amazon junk. You'll notice no difference. We get a kickback. Just coffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Give us a review on iTunes. Get the app at majorityapp.com. You can do everything you want to do to help support the program and listen to the program. Call the program. I am the program through that app. It's a great app. Check it out. Works on Android and iOS. All right, we'll see you in a minute.